From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1935 when researchers zeroed in on a new kind of bacteria, new to them anyway. It was a bacteria that can be found in our gut. Now, not in all people, and it was resistant to the first attempts to isolate it. It also grew very slowly in culture. It was, bluntly speaking, a difficult little bug. So they named it Bacillus difficilis. In 1970, it was renamed Clostridium difficile, often referred to as C. diff. And this bacteria is important because if we're not careful, it can do serious damage. Why and where do we get C. diff? It's not totally clear. It's often picked up in the hospital setting, but not always. And if we're taking antibiotics, especially certain kinds of antibiotics, the other bacteria in our intestines can get wiped out. And when C. diff is left largely alone in our bodies, it can be life-threatening. Last fall, the Centers for Disease Control looked at the growing prevalence of C. diff in hospital settings and elsewhere. The CDC was worried that perhaps too many doctors and too many hospitals were prescribing too many antibiotics. So they've studied the issue some more and earlier this month released the findings. Some doctors prescribe antibiotics when patients very simply don't need them or will not benefit from them. Some hospitals prescribe three times the amount of the same antibiotic that a doctor in another hospital does in a similar treatment setting. It's inconsistent, and the result is that more cases of C. diff are popping up, thanks to superfluous use of antibiotics, perhaps. For the elderly or for young children, that's especially dangerous. It's unfair to paint all hospitals as making the same errors. And in fact, one of the authors of this new report is Dr. Renoir Dumiati, who directs infection surveillance and prevention at URMC Center for Community Health. She's in studio for the hour. Dr. Dumiati, welcome to Connections.
Thank you.
And we also have Dr. Paul Grayman, an epidemiologist for Strong Hospital. Dr. Grayman, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And both of our guests, I should say, are infectious disease specialists. We're going to address all kinds of ground here, not just C. diff, as we've kind of talked about, which is an important part of the story, but also the issue of antibiotic-resistant microbes, C. diff and beyond, in which we've got concerns about what's happening in treatment settings. So we're going to ask your questions and try to get answers. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I hope I have set it up with some accurate background, but Dr. Dumiati and Dr. Grayman, as we've talked about, it can be a complex issue. So let me start with you, Dr. Dumiati. You're one of the authors on the new report. Have we at least accurately described the setting that says it's inconsistent across the country in hospital settings, and some doctors are prescribing antibiotics when they very frankly should not be?
Yeah, it highlights, let's go back and see why the CDC had to come up with a report like this, because there is certain urgency to focus on the overuse of antibiotics, not just in the hospital, but also in the community setting. Because we're seeing now more and more resistant bacteria. And we have one that people have recently described called CRE, or carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae. And the problem with this organism, even though it's still not very common, but you might end up with an infection that cannot be treated. And it's well reported that 50% of people who have that bacteria in their blood can die. So this is why the impetus to highlight the issue of overuse of antibiotic. And it's usually the use of it is really culture driven by the hospital. You know, some hospital have very good program that audit prescribing and know that, tell the physician, you shouldn't prescribe this, you should prescribe that antibiotic and you should stop now. And some don't. So the report highlight that it's important to all of us to come together and make sure that whenever you prescribe an antibiotic, it's given for the right indication, the right duration, the right type of infection. And this is driven by what we call antimicrobial stewardship program in every hospital, which is not at this time, you know, at all the hospital in the New York State. And this report highlights that we need to have at every hospital a program that looks at antibiotic use.
It should be of some comfort, I would think, to our listeners to hear that in the Rochester area, we're helping lead the conversation on what's going on with antibiotic use. But let me ask Dr. Grayman, what was your response to seeing the study, the results, and the concern about antibiotic prescription?
Well, I think these issues in infectious diseases and in hospitals we've known about for a long time, so these are not new issues to us. And, you know, antibiotics have been around for about 60, 70 years, and problems with resistance to antibiotics have been there from the very beginning. So essentially, if antibiotics are used, bacteria will devise ways to become resistant to those drugs. And that's a natural evolution that occurs over time with the use of antibiotics. So for example, the oldest antibiotic that most of us are familiar with is penicillin, which came on the scene in the 1940s and 1950s. And this was a great advance in medicine. This was a miraculous achievement because so many lives are saved and so much misery can be spared with antibiotics. And going back to penicillin, from the very beginning, there began to arise problems with resistance to penicillin, such that by, say, the 1960s to 1970s, many of the bugs that we treated with penicillin, for example, staph infections, mm-hmm. had become resistant to penicillin. So that today, in 2014, less than 5% of all staph are susceptible to penicillin. 60 years ago, they were all susceptible to penicillin.
Wow.
So this is an evolution that's been going on ever since we had the miracle of antibiotics. So it's not a new issue today, but it's one that's been escalating over all those years because we have more and more antibiotics, more and more use of antibiotics, and with a lot of the other advances in medicine, with all kinds of surgery, heart surgeries, bone marrow transplants, liver transplants, kidney transplants, things that would have not been survived, illnesses that would not have been survived 50 years ago. With many of those have come risks of infection that occur, especially when those patients are in hospitals. So there's a lot of advances that have driven increased use of antibiotics. And with the increased use, the evolution of more and more resistance to those antibiotics.
And so allow me to ask a question that's, I'm sure it's sort of based in ignorance, but I'm fascinated by the fact that 60 years ago, penicillin was essentially 100% effective on staph, as you say. Now it's 5%. And it has, in my mind, it creates this scenario where we have an antibiotic and it has some kind of a shelf life of efficacy that over time, do they all run into reduced effectiveness over time? And will they
varies,
run out?
It varies, mm-hmm. which some antibiotic, it took like 10 years to develop resistance, like mm-hmm. a drug called vancomycin that we also use for staph aureus. The penicillin was within a year of using it became resistant. So it depends on the antibiotic and the type of bacteria and the different mechanism. And that's why really there is also an impetus to have more and more antibiotic working differently to kill bacteria. However, the industry, you know, is for antibiotic development is hindered by the fact it's not a money-making business because you use antibiotic for a week or two compared to something that for heart disease or high cholesterol that you have to use for life. So that's really one of the reasons why we don't have newer antibiotic to fight more resistant bacteria. So it's something expected, but for now, because we have a limited number of new antibiotic, we have to be very careful with the way we use them.
If we had more of a profit incentive, would we be farther along in having new and better antibiotics?
Probably.
I think we would be. And for many years, there always seemed to be a new antibiotic coming down the pike or in the pipeline. So there were a number of drugs in development. And I think we all were somewhat complacent over those decades that there would always be another antibiotic that would work where the older ones were now failing. But it's gotten to the point where today there are very few antibiotics in development that are going to answer the problem of resistance to the older antibiotics.
I'm a little unsettled by this conversation, but it's important to have this conversation. And if you want to join it, 263-9994, 263-WXXI, we're talking about a new CDC report that found that antibiotic resistance is growing and there's a concern about perhaps over-prescription of antibiotics or inconsistent prescription of antibiotics in hospitals across the country. Now, Rochester does very well on this score, and That's thanks in large part to our guests who are here today, Dr. Paul Grayman, an epidemiologist for Strong Hospital, and Dr. Renwa Dumyati, who helped author this report. And we're going to kind of get to the difference between C. diff and these microbes in a moment. But I also want to ask what would be to me the human question here. If I go to the hospital, a lot of people just want to be prescribed something to feel like you're getting better. You know, can't you give me something to make me feel better? And I wonder if it's a, you know, I don't mean to be maligning doctors. Doctors do amazing things. I mean, I'm somebody who had a non-open heart surgery. I'll be praising doctors till my last breath. But is there a human factor that doctors want to be able to give somebody something, even if they're in the back of their mind it might not be effective? Dr. Grayman, I'll start with you.
Absolutely. I think that's the very human side to what all of us are doing. We're in the business, the work of medicine, because we want to help people. We want to cure their illnesses. We want people to feel better. And so we're driven by a desire to do that. And there is an expectation from patients that something will be prescribed in any case to make me feel better. And that's the expectation of physicians and to some extent of hospitals. So that's something we all have to resist to some extent. I think the patients have to resist it. And the doctors don't like to tell patients, well, tough it out. There's really, you have a viral illness. Nothing I can give you is going to make it, is going to resolve that problem.
And Dr. Dumyati, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I want to add something about the study really highlighting that parent pressures, for example, for the pediatric, you take your child to the pediatrician because they have a viral, not a viral, upper respiratory tract illness, they're mm-hmm. not getting better. Mm-hmm. And the pressure makes a difference when you go to the doctor. So a study showed that doctor prescribed antibiotics 62% of the time if they perceived parents expected them, and 77% of the time if they feel parents do not expect them, because there's that pressure, and it takes time to tell a parent with a sick child, look, your child doesn't really have a bacterial infection. Antibiotic work only on bacteria. Flu, for example, is not a bacteria, it's a virus, and an antibiotic is not going to make a difference. So it takes longer for a doctor to explain to the mother or father that, you know, I know your child is sick. I think this is viral. Your child does not need antibiotic, needs symptomatic treatment. So that's conversation. It's probably harder if they are aware that the parent wants an antibiotic, wants something given now. Mm-hmm. So again, they can drive. That's why we really need to educate not just physician about using antibiotic. We really need to educate the parents, us, to say, step back and say, is it really necessary that I get an antibiotic?
Yeah, and we're going to get to the phones in just a second. It's not only a case that you're describing where a physician may say, okay, I'll prescribe an antibiotic because I'm feeling pressure from the parents, even if that physician knows that absent a placebo effect, nothing's going to change here. But that it's not just that it would be ineffective, is that it could create more problems.
Right.
And that's even much worse, a much worse scenario than even the former, right?
Right. So the more you use antibiotic, the more there's pressure on bacteria to kind of try to survive and become resistant to it. So that's one issue. The other issue, you can have reactions. For example, with the use of penicillin, you can have rash. Some people might have a severe reaction where they can have what we call anaphylaxis, where their blood pressure goes down and pass out. So there is always, you have to, you know, balance the risk and benefit. And one of the major risks that has been described more recently is that infection due to C. difficile. And for C. difficile infection to happen, you need to have some change in your normal bacterial flora of your large bowel. If they're there, then you kind of are resistant to acquiring that other bacteria called C. difficile. And what happens with C. difficile, you can either be asymptomatic when you acquire it, or you can have some diarrhea. Some of the people have like 15 bowel movement a day for a week or two until they get diagnosed and treated. Some people might progress so fast that they can die within 24 hours of their disease. And some people can have a very severe disease where their large bowel or large intestine becomes very distended and they need surgery to remove their bowels. So it's kind of, it could be a very mild disease, but it could be a very severe disease. And the way to prevent this infection really to happen is to use the antibiotics sparingly, use them when they were needed. And we're seeing, so this infection used to be common in the hospital. It has been reported since the 1970s, as you said. But since the early 2000s, there have been an increase in the number of infection, and it's probably due to a new strain of this bacteria that has emerged.
Of C. diff.
Of C. diff.
All right, so I want to hold that thought there just for a moment, because I want to make sure we get to the phones. We do have people calling 263-WXXI, 263-9994, but we're going to make sure we continue on the C. diff conversation, which is parallel but not exactly the same as resistant microbes. So let's get to Shauna, who's been waiting to talk with us this afternoon. Thanks for calling, Shauna.
Hi. I recently retired from being a physician myself. I started medical school in 1970, and they gave us the song and dance about don't overprescribe antibiotics because they'll become useless. And it's just as the lady on your, I'm sorry, I don't have her name.
Yeah, Dr. Dumyati.
Just as she said, if somebody is saying, I had one man I'll never forget who said he was going to punch me out if I didn't give his son, who was aged 7 or 8, some antibiotic, some penicillin for his sore throat. Although he had had a viral cold a couple of weeks ago, his other children had it last week, and it seemed to me pretty clear that now the 8-year-old had it. But there's other things that we do in the environment. For example, there are a number of disinfectants. Lysol comes to mind, which advertise that you know they kill 99.99% of bacteria, and you should spray all your countertops regularly. Well, what that does is you kill off all the friendly bacteria, and what is left are the bacteria that the few that can resist Lysol. And the food supply that is on your countertop, microscopic food supply, you cultivate, very nasty bacteria. And we kind of wish that people would stop, the answer to cleaning your house remains, the best answer is soap and water.
Yeah, and Sean, this is an important point here, and thank you for the call. The question about antibacterial, whether it's Purell, which have become sort of ubiquitous, or others, that it kind of dovetails with what Shauna brought up here. Let me start with Dr. Grayman. Do you agree with her point about antibacterial sprays, the Lysols of the world?
Well, we need to make a distinction between antibiotics or anti-infectives, things like penicillin and many of the others that we've been alluding to, and disinfectants, which are not antibiotics, but are chemicals that kill bacteria and many viruses. And some of them are extremely effective. So Purell, for example, which is one of the brands of the alcohol hand rub that many of us use, alcohol is very effective at killing most types of bacteria, not all, and viruses as well. So we, as practicing physicians, use alcohol hand rub all the time on our hands, and it's something we'd advocate that that people do who are come in contact with many other people in the course of their day, kids in school, people at work, and so forth. And many of the bacteria and viruses that we do transfer from one person to another, common colds, are carried on our hands and on our skin. So contact between people and with objects in the environment that we all handle are ways that we acquire everyday infections like colds and coughs and such, as well as more serious infections. So using disinfectants is a practical, logical, and effective thing to do. Now, whether one should use these in their kitchen, I don't think is quite as clear. I think the idea there, as the caller said, is keeping your area where you prepare food clean and not to use surfaces where you've had fresh meat and chicken and so forth that might carry dangerous bacteria, to use those same surfaces to prepare other food that you're preparing to eat. So those things need to be disinfected, and a lot of care needs to be taken
there. All right, we appreciate the clarification there. Let's get to Mindy in Rochester. Go ahead, Mindy.
Yes, I was thinking, is it possible that like penicillin dropped from being almost 100% efficacious down to 5%? Is it possible contributor that to that is that systemic within the American diet, within the population as a whole, a great many people are having hamburgers at McDonald's or wherever, and the cattle have been shot up with the antibiotics. So within our diet, needing hamburger and various meats, we've become resistant to penicillin and other antibiotics.
That's a good question. Dr.
It's
Dumiati?
It's a good question, and I think there is more and more push to reduce the antimicrobial use for poultry, pig farms, and so forth. And many of these antibiotics are given not for sick, but for
healthy.
For healthy, for example, pigs, to make them bigger.
Yeah, cows, and pump them up.
Yes, pump them up for chicken and so forth to prevent, you know, outbreak of some diseases. But we don't know, we don't really understand 100% the effect of on us when we eat that, you know, the pig meat, or we eat the chicken. But we know, though, that those chicken or pigs or cows, what happens to them is what similar to what happens to us. They might have resistant organism. And so if there is a contamination of the meat at the time of slaughter, then that resistant organism can be in your meat. And if you don't cook it well, you might get exposed to that resistant bacteria. But I'm not really sure if the antibiotic that is in the meat gets into your system to affect your resistant flora. But that's a very good question, and there are going to be more studies to try to to evaluate that question. And definitely there is a push to have less use of antimicrobial for prophylaxis in the poultry and meat industries.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And there's a lot of controversy, I think, and debate in this country and elsewhere in the world on how much antibiotics are appropriate to be using in livestock and poultry and so forth. And in fact, if you look at the sheer tonnage of antibiotics used in the United States, the large majority of that is used in animal husbandry. In production, not in human medicine. And there have been cases where it's been quite clear that there is some relationship between certain resistant antibiotics, resistant bacteria occurring in an animal population and then causing an outbreak in humans, often associated with poultry or egg production. And it's also been shown in some settings in Europe in particular, where certain antibiotics were being used in raising turkeys, for example. And bacteria that became resistant to that particular antibiotic were found in the turkeys, found in the turkey farmers, and found in people living in the area where that antibiotic was being used for the turkey farming.
It was a couple months ago on this program we had Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, who is pushing for new legislation on this issue. And one of the problems is that farms, large factory operations, often will employ their own doctors, their own veterinary staff, excuse me, and they will make a determination that an animal that most of us would judge to be healthy needs an antibiotic. And so Congresswoman's efforts focus on legislation that would say you cannot give antibiotic to a healthy cow, a healthy pig. You can't pump it up just to have a fatter, bigger animal for slaughter. The loophole being that when you employ the doctor, it's easier to get a doctor's note that says, this animal is sick. So they're working on figuring out what to do with the loophole there, but Congresswoman Slaughter has been talking about exactly that issue, and I think I appreciate the call, Mindy. Very, very interesting, and at least, as Dr. Dumianti says, more study is coming and more understanding is coming with more time on this one. But for now, I like antibiotic-free meat. That's what we have in our house. Let's take the shortest break in radio since I'm late for a break. We'll come back in less than a minute, and we're going to talk about exactly where we think C. diff is coming from, if we know, and what we ought to know as patients when it comes to some of the recommendations, because the CDC they've put some ideas on what hospitals can do, what doctors can do, and what we should all know as patients if we're in that setting. So much more with Dr. Paul Grayman, an epidemiologist for Strong Hospital, and Dr. Renwa Dumianti, who directs the Infection Surveillance and Prevention at URMC's Center for Community Health. I'm Evan Dawson. You're listening to Connections and member-supported public radio.
Documentary lovers take note. The critically acclaimed documentary Tim's Vermeer opens this week at The Little. The film follows Tim Jennison, a Texas-based inventor who attempts to solve one of the greatest mysteries in all of art. How did 17th century Dutch master Johannes Vermeer manage to create a painting strikingly similar to photographs 150 years before the invention of photography? The epic research project Jennison embarks on to test his theory is as extraordinary as what he discovers. Learn more at thelittle.org.
And welcome back. It is a Monday afternoon. I'm Evan Dawson, and you're listening to Connections on WXXI. Hope you're listening. Maybe you're in your car or online on our mobile app, or maybe you're at work and talking about a very important issue for all of us, because eventually, well, if we're fortunate, we're all going to end up in a hospital somewhere eventually here. And I say fortunate because we've got great staffs and great medical staffs across the country that will help us, but we don't want an overprescription of antibiotics. And the CDC was blunt in their new assessment that hospitals, doctors, in some settings, not all, certainly not all, but in many settings, are overprescribing. And in fact, we're reading that more than 50% of hospital patients are prescribed an antibiotic. Dr. Dumianti, do we know what the number should be? I mean, it's impossible to know exactly what it should be, but more than 50% is too high, huh?
No, there was always, there's even estimates of 65 or 70% of people during their entire hospitalization receive antibiotic. The 50% comes from a new study that did it on one day, how many patients in the hospital get antibiotic. Yes, it's 50%, because probably a major reason for admission to the hospital is infection. But there is data that shows that almost half of those antibiotic might be unnecessary, or the duration can be shortened.
Wow.
And the report from the CDC used local data that we have and showed if you reduced high-risk antibiotic by 30%, you will be able to reduce the C. diff infection by almost 25%. And high-risk antibiotic are antibiotic that are what we call broad-spectrum. This means they kill more than one type of bacteria. And they're probably the harder to hit your normal bowel flora. And it's common in the hospital to use very broad spectrum when you still don't know what the infection is and so forth. There's always potential to start very broad and then narrow it down. And this is kind of what the report is saying. If you use antibiotic, make sure you use the narrower spectrum antibiotic. Make sure you use it for a shorter period of time and reassess, 2 or 3 days later, are they still needed? Because when you're sick in the emergency room, sometimes it's very hard to decide. Are you sick because you have a viral illness like the flu, or are you sick because you have a bacterial pneumonia? So sometimes everything is done because you're sick and we want to make you better. But it's very important 48 hours later to look at the culture, to look at you, to look at everything and reassess, are they still needed?
We're talking to Dr. Dumianti and Dr. Grayman, who are infectious disease specialists, among many other titles, at University of Rochester Medical Center, Strong Hospital, and their Center for Community Health. And we'd like to hear from you, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, we've been talking about antibiotic-resistant microbes, which is obviously a problem in and of itself. But then when you look at C. diff, if you're just joining us, a definition of C. diff is essentially that it is a bacteria that not all of us have, But if we get it, it lives in our intestines, and if we are on antibiotics, especially some kinds of antibiotics, those antibiotics can reduce or wipe out other bacteria in our intestines, and C. diff sort of runs rampant, and then all of a sudden we are left with, it can be severe diarrhea, it could be life-threatening, and we're seeing C. diff in cases where we think maybe antibiotics should not have been prescribed. So that's part of the concern here. Now, where do we think the C. diff is coming from? I'll start with Dr. Dumianti.
Yeah.
If not all of us have it,
right?
Where do we get it?
C. diff is everywhere, it seems. It's in the water. It could be in the soil. However, the highest burden of the organism is in the hospital, in healthcare setting. Hospitals, long-term care. There is also some debate or some new information that it might be in the doctor offices, it is in the emergency room. And so that's why the hospitals and the long-term care focus a lot of cleaning the environment of the hospital. So if you are sick in the hospital on antibiotic, we reduce your exposure to this bacteria and we reduce the transmission. Other ways that it can be transmitted is like on the hand of healthcare personnel, you know, from one patient to another. So we also focus on wearing glove when someone has C. difficile, when we get exposed to their environment, the room environment, or the patient, so we don't transmit it and wash their hands, so we don't transmit it to other people. And locally, we have a collaborative of the four hospitals to try to reduce the incidence of the infection. And we have focused a lot of cleaning of the hospital environment. So when a room on a daily basis, we clean all the high-touch surfaces, like your bed rail, the overhead table. And when you're discharged, that room is kind of stripped, is really cleaned very carefully, making sure everything, the doorknob, everything is clean. So that's kind of one aspect to try to reduce the burden of organism in the environment. Along with reducing the antimicrobial use, you will be able to reduce. And we have had, so far at the four local hospitals, we have had a reduction around 20% of the incidence of infection. And we're hoping to get lower to 30% in the next year because we're doing more antimicrobial, what we call antimicrobial stewardship intervention.
Dr. Grayman, if I don't have C. diff this week and next week I pick it up somewhere, but I'm not on antibiotics, is it possible that I won't even know I have it and I won't have any sort of noticeable symptom?
Absolutely. So most people who have acquired C. diff from somewhere,
yep,
from another person or from the environment, and carry it in their bowel, in their rectum, in their stool, where it can be found if it's looked for with cultures in a microbiology laboratory, most of those people have no symptoms at all and are well. So if you look for C. diff amongst people who are otherwise without symptoms of diarrhea and are pretty well, you can find it in a variety of you can find a variety of numbers, but something less than 5%. So even
wow,
people coming into a hospital who are otherwise not having a gastrointestinal illness, you can find C. diff in 2, 3, 4, 5% of them.
Okay.
Once people are in a hospital for a period of time, a week, 2 weeks, that number increases because C. diff is so much more prevalent in an environment where antibiotics are used a lot. And that's what a
But it doesn't mean that in that setting you're definitely going to get sick. The concern
Correct.
Is if you end up on antibiotics and you know, sometimes we need antibiotics, but part of the lesson is we don't always when we get the antibiotics. And if we get an antibiotic unnecessarily and we also happen to have C. diff, then we've got trouble. Because, well, let me ask Dr. Dumianti. Antibiotics can reduce or wipe out other bacteria in our intestines, leaving C. diff to kind of run the show, and that's trouble. But does every antibiotic affect the bacteria in our intestines or in our guts the same way?
They don't, but any antibiotic. We have seen people who got one dose of penicillin at the dentist's office develop disease.
Wow.
Yeah. So any antibiotic can cause the infection. However, there is increased risk with some type of antibiotics, such as what we call ciprofloxacin, is one known one, or something broad, people call it piperacillin tazobactam, which is a combination of two antibiotic, and it's quite broad. But any antibiotic, even one dose, can put people at risk. Now, the people that are at higher risk of developing disease, like symptomatic disease, and not just have the bacteria in their colon and not be symptoms, are the elderly. So the impact of this disease is really higher as you get older, especially the ones that are in the long-term care above the age of 85. And it probably has something to do with their kind of underlying what we call comorbidities. But we have seen it in children. We have seen it in one-year-old, however, less frequently than the people as you get older and have multiple underlying medical illnesses.
Tom on Twitter asked, recently we were traveling overseas with the group and just about everyone on the trip had a Cipro prescription with them. Thoughts on that?
Well, Cipro is often prescribed in the setting of international travel as a treatment for traveler's diarrhea, which can be acquired in lots of places around the world, but especially in less developed areas where the water supply and sanitation is not up to Western standards. And most of us who've traveled have had that experience, Montezuma's Revenge, sometimes referred to. And Cipro is a drug for treating that type of bacterial-caused diarrhea, and it's quite effective, and that's the reason it's prescribed. But that is another example of antibiotics being prescribed in anticipation of some need.
So Cipro shouldn't be prescribed unless someone has it, as opposed, you shouldn't do it preemptively?
Well, the drug should not be taken preemptively. The strategy of prescribing it for someone to carry with them to treat themselves if they develop diarrhea is an accepted strategy, because you may find yourself traveling with a pretty miserable, if not dangerous, but miserable illness, which in fact could be treated. But people have to be prudent in starting that drug if they're carrying it with them when it's really needed, and not taking it for just any upset stomach.
Megan on Facebook is asking if diarrhea should be taken as something to go to the hospital for, to check for this C. diff, is what she's referring
to.
Yeah,
I wouldn't, have a rush of people going to the emergency room for diarrhea, because there's many reasons for diarrhea.
Especially if you're not on antibiotics, right?
Right. Okay. So if you're on an antibiotic and develop, it's not unusual even for antibiotic to develop diarrhea and not due to the C. diff.
Okay.
And usually when you stop it, it goes away. The one we worry most about is when the diarrhea doesn't go away. A week or two and you still have diarrhea.
After antibiotics.
Sometimes like right at the end of your therapy, sometimes 3 or 4 days after you start your antibiotic, you can have it. So if it persists, if it's a lot, some people have 10 to 15 bowel movement a day. If you have fever, if you have severe abdominal pain, then you really should be more aware of it. What we think is probably the key is it doesn't go away. A week or two, and you have received recently an antibiotic, go to your doctor and make sure you get tested. But don't go for any diarrhea, because there is many, many reasons why people have diarrhea. You know, the one common one at this time of year is the norovirus, the one that causes diarrhea on cruise ship. But norovirus, for example, is very limited. You're very sick, and it's usually by 24 hours to 48 hours, you're all better. Mm-hmm. For C. diff, you're not better. A week or two into it, you still have diarrhea, you're severe. You should go see your doctor.
Okay.
You agree?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough, Dr. Graham.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about then some of what the CDC wants to see hospitals and staffs do to make sure that if we are in a hospital setting, if we're getting treatment for something, that we're not unnecessarily prescribed antibiotics. And if you're just joining us, CDC is concerned that there's an overprescription of antibiotics, and as a result, we're seeing microbes are going to be developing resistance to antibiotics anyway, but if you overprescribe them, that speeds up their resistance, and we don't need that happening. We also are concerned about C. diff, as we've been talking about. So, first of all, as Dr. Dumiani has told us in this hour, and the report has told us, on any given day, patients in a hospital, roughly half are given an antibiotic, and throughout the duration of a patient's stay in the hospital, close to two-thirds are given antibiotics. And Dr. Dumiani is saying it should probably be roughly half that, or at least shorter duration for about half that. So that's a dramatic change. What does the CDC want doctors and hospitals to do across the country to get these numbers more in line with where they should be?
Right, which we, to tell you the truth, we have programs at most of the hospital in town. that do what the CDC recommends.
We're ahead of it. Well, you helped author the report. I would hope that we're ahead of it. By the way, do the local numbers of local hospitals, are they much better than the national averages that we're seeing?
Locally, we have reduced the incidence by 20%, but we're still probably similar to what other
incidence of C. diff.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're just joining us, what a remarkable stat that you could cut, if you reduce antibiotics by 30%, you can reduce C. diff infection by 26%. It's almost a 1-to-1 ratio, which is a really remarkable number there.
Right.
So it's great incentive. And I see we've got a lot of callers here, but let's go over what the CDC wants hospitals to do, knowing that, hey, in Rochester, we're ahead of the curve, but what do we want doctors and hospitals to do across the country? And by the way, we've got listeners in other states, and I hope other countries, because we are online. I've got daily Cleveland and Midwest listeners, so go ahead, Dr. Grayman. What do they want hospitals to do?
Yeah, well, there's a menu of things that we should all be doing in hospitals. Not necessarily everything that's on the menu, but some selection of them. And I think the first one is to acknowledge the problem and to have a program that hospitals can establish to try and deal with it. And that means putting some resources into that sort of program, having people who are assigned with expertise, and that usually means pharmacists as well as physicians, in the proper use of antibiotic. So have those people employed and have that as part of their assignment. As well as having other resources in the way of information technology, for example, which is a very important piece of trying to get a handle on how much you're using of antibiotics, particularly in a large hospital. In order to monitor the use of antibiotics, you have to have information, certainly on a weekly, monthly, if not daily basis. So among the things that kind of a team can do is to look at the antibiotics that are being used and by what areas in the hospital or what different types of specialties. And you can have restrictions placed on the use of certain types of antibiotics so that a prescriber, physician, or nurse practitioner who wants to prescribe that antibiotic has to discuss that choice with one of the members of that team, usually a pharmacist, mm-hmm. sometimes a physician. To go over what the options might be. Is the antibiotic absolutely needed? Are there other choices that might be safer? How long the treatment should be given? And whether appropriate tests have been done to try to guide that therapy. And that leads to another important point here, which is if we don't have, as physicians, if we don't have the proper data to inform us on which antibiotics to use, it's much harder to make the right choice. And the data we're talking about are cultures. So it's very important when we're suspecting an infection to obtain cultures, either it's blood or it's urine or phlegm or drainage from a wound, whatever it might be, so that the results of that culture can drive the choice of appropriate antibiotics. And what we find is that cultures, in many cases, are not obtained when they should be.
And if you're on the phone, we're going to get to you in one second. I want to stress one more point here. Another recommendation I saw was that staff should be following up in 48 hours. If I get an antibiotic, 48 hours later, there should be some kind of a follow-up to make sure that was the right prescription. And I'm surprised to hear that that's not universal, but I know how busy doctors and their staffs are. Is it just because they're too busy for that?
No, usually some assessment is done, but it's not documented. But they want to kind of make this a standard where at 48 hours you have a process where you document that I looked at the cultures, I looked at the patient is better, culture shows say staph aureus, and I agree I would like to continue the present antibiotic for the duration of XYZ. And so it's not left it's very clear in the chart, so when there is a change of physician or change of caregiver, it's very clear that an assessment was made at 48 hours, which we usually do, but it's not always mm-hmm. documented. And they want it kind of to be, well, like a checklist, like we do with other things now. Like the checklist is the big thing, what we do, like the pilots do before they fly. So you make sure you don't miss anything.
Very good. Let's get back to the phones. Gene in Rochester. Go ahead, Gene.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I actually acquired C. diff in a local hospital. I don't question the antibiotics because I had gone into sepsis and I had to have massive antibiotics.
Okay.
I was given actually other antibiotics to combat the C. diff, but my, and I think I have pretty much defeated it, but my question is, what about, is there any role for things like what they call probiotics and also things, natural cultures and yogurt and so forth, and diet, are they of much help? Or
Thanks, Gina. Thanks for the call. Go ahead, Dr. Graham.
Yeah, that's really an excellent question, and it's an area that we're trying to answer more definitively in these last couple of years. And unfortunately, I don't think the jury is quite in yet on how helpful probiotics are. There have been several studies that do seem to show that people who take probiotics when they're taking antibiotics help to reduce the incidence of C. diff, so that they can be helpful. But some of those studies are relatively small in size. They look at limited populations. For example, studies that are looking at relatively healthy people taking antibiotics may show that probiotics are helpful in reducing what would ordinarily be a pretty small risk of C. difficile to begin with. But if you're looking at an older, much sicker population of people in hospitals, that's really a different question. And studies have not addressed that quite as clearly. So there really is controversy as to how much these things help. On the other hand, for most probiotics, there is very small risk involved and relatively small expense in taking them. And I think a lot of patients and physicians feel that if it may be helpful, it's worth trying. But it's hard for us to recommend it because we really don't know the answer.
Can I add something to the patient that just called? I think it's very important, if you had it once, that if you're going to go on antibiotic, to question if the antibiotics are needed. I agree if you're really septic in an emergency room, but sometimes we have seen people who have C. diff, and they go and they, you know, they have probably flu and they get put an antibiotic.
Yeah.
So I teach those people to really question their physician on the need for that second a new course of antibiotic.
You've already been through it once.
Because there is a potential for recurrence with this disease.
Okay. A minute left. We've got to move fast. Sue Fairport, go ahead, Sue.
Hi. What role do the meats that we eat, that animals are regularly given antibiotics, play in the prevalence of C. diff?
Yeah, and Sue, if you're just joining us, they kind of tackled that a little bit earlier, and essentially the idea is we need larger study, and we're going to see more study. There is a possibility that the widespread use of antibiotics, even especially in healthy animals, whether it's pigs, cows, or others, to kind of pump them up and make them bigger, is probably not helpful and could contain a role, fair to say, Dr. Dumiati, but we're going to see more study.
Right. It's at this point, it's not a very important risk for developing C. diff, but however, we're doing more studies. We know what the strains of, you know, animal can get C. diff. And we know, though, that the strain that the animal get are different from the human strain. There is some study that they might be similar, but the jury is still out.
Well, I want to thank our guests, Dr. Renwa Dumiati, who directs the Infection Surveillance and Prevention at URMC Center for Community Health. Thank you for being here. Dr. Grayman, an epidemiologist at Strong Hospital. We could have done 2 hours on this, it turns out. But thank you for the time, and I'm sure you'll keep us up to date as we learn more about this going forward. But great stuff today. Thank you very much. And as we learned, 62% of parents or kids end up with an antibiotic if the parents are putting pressure on the doctor. 7% get an antibiotic if the parents aren't putting pressure. I'm going to step back and not put pressure next time my kids and my 2-year-old son. Quick break here on Connections. We're coming right back. Boston Mayor Thomas Menino joins us next hour. Stay with us.